Yep. All right.
Did you want to say anything
Yeah,
or?
no. Om jag pratar svenska lite här i början så... No, that was Swedish. This is just Regine, so I'm not going to do any more like bigger presentation about her. She's going to present herself on one of the slides. So just sit back and enjoy.
Thank you very much, Peppy. And thanks ever so much for the invitation, not just to this presentation, but to Jyväskylä as well. So I'm here for 4 days this week, but then I'm back for a month at the end of October until the end of November. And I'm not expecting the weather to be quite so nice when I come back. So I've already met some of you, which has been really good. Hi to everybody else. So let's just start, if that's okay with everybody.
Yeah.
And now I can't move the slide. The down arrow?
Yeah, it should be, but it could be that it's not selected. Wait, wait,
Oh,
wait.
right. Your Mac is more complex than
Yeah.
mine.
No.
Okay. So just a sort of a slide, as Pepe said. About myself. So I'm at the Open University in the UK, where I've been for, oh, quite a long time. And I've just been awarded the research fellowship, or one of the research fellowships at the university here, which is brilliant. And I was really chuffed when I got the good news. So the sort of kind of research that I do tends to focus on the use of digital technologies in the context of language learning and teaching. And I'm really interested in what the technologies are doing to the ways in which we learn and teach. And I think that's become even more important in the recent sort of couple of years, year and a half. In the context of COVID, where everybody, well, all sort of educational institutions had to switch to online learning. And I think many of them found it really challenging. So, my sort of more particular areas of interest are, you've got the two bullet points there. So, the affordances and the potential that the new technologies offer for learner interaction. For communication and for learning in the sort of real world, and I'm going to put it into inverted commas, and then the implications of this for all the things that are important for teachers and for learners, so task design, the sort of skills development both of teachers and learners, and then I'm particularly interested in multimodality and the new literacies and sort of multi-literacies. And so what I've been trying to do over the past years is I've sort of tried to set out or sort of try out new perspectives for research, both in terms of theory and then also in terms of pedagogy. And what I've been trying to do is to sort of go beyond the relatively narrow interactionist and cognitive approaches that were used for quite a long time and are still being used in certain contexts, and instead take recourse to theories, other theories of learning, so sociocultural theory, sort of ecological principles, and I've mentioned multimodality before, the sort of multimodal nature of the new media. And you've got just sort of one of my recent publications there on the screen. So I wrote a book which came out in 2019 entitled Disruptive Technologies and the Language Classroom, a Complex Systems Theory Approach, which sort of did what it or tried to do what it says on the tin. So it tried to apply complex systems theory to language education. And maybe I'll talk about that at some other point, but that's the sort of kind of thing that I've been interested in the past years. And currently, I've just started working on a handbook, so Bloomsbury, invited me to do a handbook on language learning and technology. And I think they see the need, especially at the moment, for this kind of thing. So that's something that when I come back in October, I'll definitely talk to colleagues here about to see whether they'd be interested in contributing. So, but let me just give you an overview of the presentation and sort of move away from sort of what I'm doing and what I have been doing. So this presentation looks at various projects that concern themselves with the development of language teachers' online skills. And we started this, and we initially was a group of people at the Open University, but then the team got larger as we sort of met other people from other universities, went to conferences, talked about what we were trying to do, published things. And in the end, it sort of turned into quite a large team of researchers, not just in Europe, but also now beyond. And as I say, focusing on language teachers' online skills, what these are and how they can be supported. Research is really key in this. So we, from the start, accompanied the work that we did, for example, at the Open University, and I'll come to that in a minute. So we accompanied this by research and try to involve as many people as possible. And here's just a sort of a very brief overview of the outcomes. So, and I'll go into more detail in a minute. So we've had projects, or we've done projects, both funded and unfunded ones, looking at teachers' professional development. We came up with a framework and a skills pyramid that sets out the different competencies that language teachers need. And I think that's been received relatively well. And we now continue with the research that we do on teachers. And most recently, that's been in the context of a research network within ILA, the International Association for Applied Linguistics, which probably most of you or all of you will be familiar with. And as I said, sort of 5 minutes ago, I think COVID-19 has really made this kind of work even more important than it's already been. So let's go back sort of quite a number of years. So just a bit of information about the Open University and about language learning and teaching at the OU. So the OU actually had its 50th anniversary a couple of years ago. So we were established in 1969, and the idea was to just give people a sort of a second chance who didn't have a first chance to go to university when they were, whatever, 17 or 18 years old. And even though the OU was founded, not in 1069, in 1969, the language courses actually didn't start until way later. So in 1995 with the first French course. And the French course, and then the sort of courses that followed, first in Spanish and then in German, they used printed materials and face-to-face and telephone tutorials. So telephone tutorials was sort of all the rage at that point. But the university didn't feel that we could do languages before that was possible. And then sort of end of the 1990s, a group of us tried out or started trying out various tools. So trying to sort of bring in more technology to, oh, there's somebody who's making funny noises. Oh, that's better. Thank you. Yes, so we started trying out various tools, and I joined the university in 1999, I think. So there were, I don't know, somebody is sort of, I don't know what that is. I can hear.
Res, please mute yourself.
Okay. Okay, that's better. Yes, so we tried out, or the sort of team tried out various tools. So there was one.
Sorry, it's Chris.
Chris, could you please turn your microphone off so we hear that what you're doing at home? It's not relevant for us at the moment. Thank you, Chris.
Regina, you should be able to do that as you are the.
Okay, I'm not very.
I tried, but I can't mute anybody. Peppy,
yeah.
Mute everybody.
She's trying to find the cursor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we will have okay, to... now he's muted.
Thank you.
Should be muted, isn't it? Mute.
Ooh.
Yep.
Right, thank you. Yes, so the Vox chat was the first audio tool that was used, and that was before my time. But then when I came to the OU, Lyceum had been introduced, an audiographic conferencing system, and that was then followed by Flash Meeting, which added video as well. And you've just, I mean, I've got a sort of a little screenshot here of the timeline and the various tools that we used over the years. And I think the sort of key thing was that we as a team, as a German team, wanted to make sure that learners had opportunities for spoken interaction, because I think that is sort of the be-all and end-all of language learning. And there is, if you're interested in it, there is an article where...
You did mute yourself.
So you've got the reference there, and that's a former PhD student of mine and myself did an article actually looking at the development of tools in languages at the OU. So if you're interested, it gives quite a sort of a useful overview. How do I get to the next page?
It's probably dead when I touch
Now it should work. Yes. Oh, that's gone too far. There we are. Yes, so that was just a sort of a brief overview of languages at the, well, technology and languages at the Open University. Let's go back to teacher training, teacher skills, sort of teacher support. So we did, I was involved in a couple of projects in the sort of early 2000s where we used the German beginners course, which one of my colleagues chaired, and actually devised a special training program for the new online tutors. And then did an evaluation of that, both of the students who took part in the course. So it was just a normal sort of Open University course over half a year. And we also got the responses from the 26 tutors who taught those, supported and taught those 421 students. And it was quite clear from that study that pedagogical training for tutors was really key because they felt challenged to work in a field that was pretty sort of fast moving and technologies were developing relatively quickly at that point. And from a sort of a, I mean, quite a lot of them just were used to face teaching. And so we did some recommendations for best practice for tutor training. And I've got a couple of references there if you want to have a look at that. We defined what successful online language teaching looks like and what the skills are that the language teachers actually need to deliver. And when we were looking more closely at these skills, we sort of realized that there's almost like a sort of a pyramid that, I mean, you might not always start at the bottom, but there are sort of certain things that you need if you want to move on in terms of the skills development. And so we came up with this skills pyramid, which you can see here on the slide. And I'm not going to go through the sort of different stages, but that was sort of one thing that helped us just to conceptualize what the teachers needed in terms of sort of background and knowledge and skills to be able actually to deal with working in an online environment. And as I were talking about the sort of early 2000s here. And then we also decided to work together with another distance university, online university, that's the Universitat Oberta de Catalunya in Spain, and worked quite closely with colleagues there. They had much more of a focus in terms of their teaching on asynchronous language learning. We had the sort of experts in synchronous language learning, and we felt that if we put the two together, we'd probably come up with something that was even more useful than just doing either one or the other. And then the skills pyramid, we did sort of simplify a little bit because people felt, so we published it, got feedback from quite a lot of people who said, oh no, it's sort of too detailed. It's sort of not quite right. And so we came up with a second skills pyramid, which is a bit broader and brings some of the sort of individual skills together in sort of more of a skill set. And that was something that we published in an edited book that Uschi Stickler and I did in 2015. And so you can see that you've still got the basic ICT competence at the bottom, and then more specific technical competence to actually deal with the medium and what the medium allows and doesn't allow. Then really important communicative competence and socialization, and how to facilitate that. And then how the teachers make the tool their own and are creative or can be creative with the tool that they've got. So let's move on now. So this was the sort of background in terms of Open University and then our sort of initial collaboration with the colleagues in Catalonia. And that then fed into a series of projects, and we sort of used the overarching title, Developing Online Teaching Skills, and just talk about DOTS, the sort of abbreviation. And we got funding for a project initially, a three-year project from 2008 to 2011, funded by the ECML. I don't know whether you're probably all familiar with that. And what we did was we actually set out to develop, test, and evaluate a framework for training language teachers who had to or were interested in teaching online. And the sort of result of that, sort of very sort of tangible result of that project, was that we set up workshops, or we developed and then set up workshops. And then also in a sort of a second step, an online training kit for language teachers. And that included a whole sort of tools inventory alongside open educational resources and templates. And then also developed activities that tried to support the teachers, tutors, in developing the skills that we had put into the skills pyramid. And then we also created a Moodle workspace, which we wanted to sort of use as a community of practice for the groups that did the workshops with us. So for a particular group, both before the workshop and then after the workshop was organized through the ECML. But then also have it as a record for then the next lot of teachers doing another workshop. And then they were able to engage with whatever was already or is already on the Moodle workspace. So if you want to have a look at that, I've put some links there. And I don't know, Pepe, presumably we can share the PowerPoint afterwards. Yes, yeah, very much so. And then there were two follow-up projects. One is called More Dots, and I still find the name a bit weird, but I think I was the only one who didn't like it. And then another one is ICT Rev, which is the sort of most recent one, which is ongoing. And they, again, were funded by the ECML, but we also got some EU funding for the ICT Rev and support from the EU for the ICT Rev project. And I'll sort of say a bit more about those sort of various initiatives. So what we developed was this sort of a workshop design, which wasn't just a workshop, but it also included pre-workshop activities, so a survey and an online activity that the participants were asked to take part in. Then in the workshop, we worked on the pedagogical principles with the workshop participants, then looked at the ICT Rev inventory, let the teachers try out various tools, got them to develop activities, tasks, and so on, so different learning activities, and supported them in doing this during the workshop. And then post-workshop, there was follow-up support for the teachers and tutors. And these workshops continue. So the latest figures that I've got is that the team has done over 60 workshops in more than 29 European countries. So it's a sort of a pretty, it's turned into a bit of a sort of a pretty big beast. We've reached over 1,000 language educators, plus other people. One of the team members is based in Canada. And so we've also done stuff in the US. There's been a workshop, and I can't remember how that came about, in Jamaica. And I think the team who went had a really good time. And we've got links into China. And Uschi Stickler and a colleague, a Chinese colleague, did a huge workshop, which was done totally online. To I don't know how many thousand teachers and teacher trainees in China. And there's sort of some more figures about the inventory of ICT tools that it's been accessed over 150,000 times between beginning of 2019 and February 2020. So it's being used, which is great to see. And the feedback we get tends to be pretty positive. Okay, let's move on to something sort of that has resulted from, or is sort of one of the results from all the training work, sort of skills work that we've been looking at, and that's an ILA research network. So we felt that it would be good to get more people involved from other countries in the research side of things. So, I mean, our team consisted until then by so us in the UK, the Universitat Oberta de Catalunya in Spain. We had a small team in Germany, initially linked to university, and then just a sort of couple of people themselves. We had the University of Zagreb involved for quite a long time. Who else is there? And there's at least a couple more. But we felt we should sort of widen the net a little bit and try and bring other people in. And so the ILA network has for us, has sort of done that to a certain extent. So we did a presentation, and I think I've got that on the next slide. We did a presentation for the first time, not at this ILA conference, but the one before, was it 2008, I think. I think attracted attention, and then also managed to get more members into the group. So what we've been particularly interested in has been teachers continuing professional development activities, mainly with technology, sometimes without technology. And then one of the focus areas that we got interested in was, well, what is an ideal teacher? What is an ideal language teacher? What sort of skills should he, she have? How should they teach? Should they teach? How would they deal with learners and so on? And that was something that we've been focusing on for sort of quite some time. And you can see that the ILA did sort of managed to recruit members and members across the entire world, although there's not quite so many in Asia, but there's a representation in China. You can see Australia, New Zealand, South America, and the South American colleagues are really keen and interested, a little bit in the US and quite a bit across Europe, as you can see in those smiley faces. And so here's just a couple of sort of quotes which we've had from teachers thinking about what teaching is going to turn into over the coming sort of years, the coming decade. And I'll talk a bit more about that in the next sort of 5 minutes. So here are just a couple of quotes about students will all have, a bit like Pepe now, have something in their hands during class, phone, tablet, laptop, that it's not just the sort of blackboard in front of you. And I think that's already the case in a lot of contexts, but of course not in all. I'm just thinking about, I don't know, sort of situation in Africa where we've had a big project at the Open University to support teachers with mobiles, and that's been really, really successful. And then a second quotation referencing mobile technology. So here's just a sort of an image for you. So again, relating to this research network, the TP Lang 21 network, about 21st century teachers and the important aspects. So you can read it yourself, but I'll just sort of go through them. So it's training on the one hand, but also taking into account the teachers' needs in their specific environments. Also making sure that guidelines and policies are sort of heeded on the one hand, and then potentially improved and changed if necessary. Then there's this sort of ideals. What is an ideal teacher? And I'll come back to that in a minute. And then what are the requirements? What do we actually want a language teacher to do and to be, in a way, as well? And here, just a sort of an overview of the activities that the research network has engaged in. So we've done research, and you can see the publications that have originated from that. Here, there's a couple there. And so we did a symposium at WorldCall 2018. I was in South America. And then we also did another presentation with quite a number of REN members participating at the most recent ILA conference not that long ago. And I don't know, maybe some of you were at that. And I want to sort of more or less finish with a few slides on the most recent study that we've been engaged with within the REN, trying to draw more people into the research that we've been doing. And we decided that we wanted the focus to be how language teachers actually are seeing their role change in the context of the increased use of online technologies, because that's something that teachers again and again in the workshops kept saying to us, oh, my role is sort of very, very different to what it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so we came up with a sort of scenario and then wanted the teachers to comment on this and sort of in a way answer the sort of different questions that we asked. And I will actually read that to you. So what we gave them was the following. So digital technologies are changing the ways we communicate, and hence the possibilities for language teaching and learning are continuously changing too. Imagine you're teaching in the year 2030 and your students use the latest technology for their learning. What is your role as a teacher? What qualities do you bring to language teaching? What type of qualifications do you have? What type of learning activities do you design for your students? And how do you evaluate whether your teaching has been successful? So we set this in 2030, but then sort of once we got the results, we thought we probably should have pushed it forwards even a little bit more, because 2030 now doesn't seem that far away. But we still got some really interesting data. So we collected the data over a sort of a 3-month period from October to January, so last October to this January, and used the REN members to circulate the questionnaire to all the teachers whom they had access to. We got, as you can see here, 109 responses in 7 languages. So we had a sort of quite a task of dealing with these, and made some interesting sort of experiences with Google Translate and other translation software, but then also used the sort of native speakers to do translations as well. And you can see we had French, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, German, and lots of Hungarians. I think the Hungarian REN member really got her colleagues to sort of engage in this, which was really, really good. So we, in terms of methodology, we try to use a sort of an innovative approach, and used all the REN members who were interested in taking part in the data analysis. And because there were, I don't know, there were about between 15 and 20. And so we actually organized small groups, and the groups sort of found themselves by their mutual interest. So different people had made different suggestions in terms of data analysis and research methods and or methodologies. And so the sort of groups or the people then found themselves in small groups and used their approach to analyze the data. We did base the work on the English translations, but I know that in most groups, where possible, they also went back at some point to the original data that we had. And we used two relatively distinct methods of analysis. So the first one was a mix of quantitative and qualitative. So what we did, and I think I was part of that first group, if I remember correctly. So we sort of divided up the different 5 sub-questions to a small group each, and then did a qualitative analysis and some other sort of quantitative things. But I think the qualitative analysis brought out the more interesting things. And then there was a second group, which was sort of qualitative and inductive, where they started with a holistic view. So they looked at all the responses and then tried to actually generate themes from the texts that these teachers had written, and then used visual methods to come up with themes and then to sort of finalize these themes as well. And I've got a couple of images here. So here you can see a Padlet that one of the groups did, where everybody just sort of contributed online, commenting on the various angles that were included in that question that we gave to the teachers. And then on the right-hand side, you can just see sort of some, again, notes that people wrote, but wrote in a group as well, just trying to sort of in a way, almost brainstorm sort of what came into their mind after having looked at the data. And on this slide, you can also see that word clouds were being used as well, just to see what the key terms were in what people had written. So as we tried out, we just sort of played with different tools and tried out what one could get from, glean from using these tools. And so here are, sorry, and before I carry on, I'll have another sip of tea. So here are some sort of five key results of what teachers think will be sort of important. So the first one would be pedagogical aspects. And I'll let you read. I'm not going to read you the sort of slide, but pedagogical aspects came first, then the technological aspects. And we'll come back to those two in a minute. But then the third one we thought was a really interesting one, the sort of humanizing the online learning environment and the teachers feeling that they'll be the human link in language teaching, and that technology wasn't the sort of be all and end all, that you still needed a teacher who adds the sort of human touch, as somebody said. Assessment was something that that they wrote about. Well, it was sort of something that we did ask them about. But what was interesting, again, was there was sort of talk about co-construction and formative ways of teaching. And then content knowledge was the sort of last one there. And then the kind of learning activities that teachers will be designing in the future also received some interesting responses. So the things highlighted in pink are more about sort of ways of learning, and the blue, the text in blue, is more to do with the sort of technologies. So on the pink side, you've got collaborative, interactive, integrated, oral activities being important and continuing to be important, life skills, which we thought was really interesting. So including thinking skills. And then you can see the sort of blue things that I've highlighted. So using games, using blended learning, using VR, telecollaboration, peer evaluation probably goes into both. And yeah, more sort of generally ICT 21st century skills, and AI as was also something that sort of a few people mentioned that they think that they would be doing in 2030. And so just sort of a very brief summary. So what we thought was sort of really interesting was that quite a few teachers took what we call here a whole person approach. So it's not just about getting them to learn a language, so getting the students to learn a language, but it's about ensuring their well-being, making sure that they've got emotional support when they learn online. Critical citizenship was something that a couple of people also mentioned. So that you sort of support students developing these kind of critical skills. What also came out was that there is a sort of a tension between, or they saw a tension between the old and the new. So you've got more sort of traditional teaching skills, qualifications, approaches, and pedagogies that some people were focusing on and feeling that they should continue. But other teachers felt that there are other ways of teaching, sort of more away from these more sort of traditional approaches. And they even gave examples of how they have actually been what they called future-oriented ways of teaching, how they've integrated these in their current teaching. And we did get, so people didn't necessarily get stuck with the questions. We did get quite a lot of additional information as well. which was really interesting. We felt that there was a sort of a tension between what is sure and what is not sure in terms of the future vision. And some were sort of a little bit anxious about not just their personal future in terms of teaching, but also what their students were going to do. And quite a few of them expressed the need for more training and sort of more continuous training rather than just having it, I don't know, once at the beginning of their career or once in a year or something. And then on the other hand, we had responses where it seemed to be that the teachers were pretty clear of what was going to happen and how they would be using or were already using online technologies. So just a sort of a brief summary here. So we had the sort of blues and the pinks earlier, and this is just sort of summarizing them again. So in terms of qualities, what the teachers emphasized were the human qualities in the teacher, the knowledge, both in terms of content and language. Accessibility was something that was mentioned by a number of people, but also versatility, so the teacher as the designer of learning activities. Culture came up at various points, and the importance of culture. The role of the teacher as a facilitator, mediator, guide, curator, those kind of qualities. And then sort of going with that, the teachers using empathy and creativity and being resilient, patient and reliable, which sounds all pretty good. And then in terms of technology, yes, the sort of skills, how to use ICT, but also how to prepare materials and classes using new technologies, adapting to new technologies, and that's probably where things like AI and VR come in. We also had a couple who felt they were acting as a sort of a curator of a language or a culture in their language teaching, and training I think came up quite a lot. And then some person said they will get there. So the teachers, they will get there, even though it might be a sort of a slightly bumpy road. So the future for us, so I started off sort of going back to the 1990s at the Open University, and then sort of gave you a bit of an overview of the various projects that we've been engaging in terms of teaching skills and teacher support, and then sort of ending with a sort of a snapshot view of what teachers think is going to happen, or what language teaching and learning will be like in 10 years. So what we are going to do next is to actually write up the study that we've just done. I mean, what you saw here was just the sort of initial analysis and the results from that. We are also expanding the research in the REN, so to take more account of COVID, look at policies more, because that is something I think that is playing a major factor in terms of language teaching and language teacher development as well. We are hoping to use again sort of some not just sort of traditional conventional methodologies and approaches, but maybe use vignettes of language teachers as guides and facilitators, so try and sort of see what a language teacher in 2030 will look like, should look like. And I've sort of written here as teachers of critical thinking and citizenship, as technology experts, etc. So we'll have a sort of a think about where the paths sort of can go. And then we're also hoping to expand the research network a little bit more, to have more input from those sort of areas on the map that were a bit blank on the earlier slide. So we are reapplying, or we have to reapply for the research network with ILA at some point this autumn. We haven't had the information, but we think it's coming up in October. So if anybody is interested, have a think about joining. You don't commit yourself to very much, but there might be sort of opportunities coming up where you then would like to get involved. So drop me an email if you are interested, and then I'll sort of make sure that that gets shared with everybody else and included in the application. I think I'm doing the application, so because I'm on study leave. Okay, and just some references, I mean, not for you to look at now, but those are some of the key publications that have come out of all the work. You can see going back to, I think the oldest one here is from 2007, but the first sort of publication that came out on all of this was in 2005. So just a sort of a very quick snapshot of what we've been doing. And I don't know, I mean, I probably should also thank you to sort of all the colleagues who've been involved in this and who I am representing here. It's a great team to work with, and we've had a lot of fun as well as doing some more serious work. So, any questions? Comment. Or comments? Yes. So you do that. It's so small, I can't see that. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You need good eyes.
Yeah. So any comments? Aaron, you've raised your hand. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry. There, that's better now. All right. I'm curious, because you said that this was from the teacher's perspective. How would students view the ideal, like, online teacher? Would it be similar? Would they add anything?
Good question. I think you need another study for that, rather than me sort of giving you an answer on this one. And I think that would be worth studying. It's quite a tricky one because I mean, this was a global study, and I'm not quite sure how you do a similar study with students. You'd probably have to do sort of mini studies in the different countries and then somehow bring them together, but it would need quite a lot of involvement from quite a lot of people. So I don't know whether somebody else has got a suggestion for that question. It's a very good one, actually, and I'm going to make a note of that.
Aaron, are you signing up for the research network to carry out that part here at Uvascular?
I'll see if I have enough time.
Time is always kind of negotiable.
Okay, then I can maybe talk to you.
Yeah, you can talk to me, and then we can talk about that research network.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Bye. Okay.
Then I think it was Bertold, and after that it was Adrienne.
Yeah, thank you for your speech. Very interesting. On one slide, you spoke about how to get students to read and to answer questions or something. Do you remember which slide it was?
Yes.
So what are the reading activities and this online teaching, and how do they learn to use the read materials not only for content information but also for enlarging their language skills? What kind of texts do they read? Are they choosing them by themselves? What instruction do they get for those reading activities, and how do you assess the outcomes of those reading activities?
Wasn't that in the context of what the teacher said?
Yes.
And of course, I've got not much more information beyond the sort of texts that the teachers wrote. And some of them did sort of write continuous prose. Some of them just took the individual sort of what almost were like sub-questions. and answer them initially. So we haven't got any more information than that. But again, something that if you're interested in sort of reading and writing, something to be followed up. I mean, I don't know how you would do that because it's such a broad field. Not sure.
Okay, thanks.
Adrian. Yeah, Adrian.
I actually have two questions. Thank you for the presentation, first of all, and sorry that I missed the previous meeting. I wanted to ask, first of all, it's another perspective question that you said that at least as far as I understand, you're trying to instill kind of the universal ideal teacher image. And I was wondering, especially maybe from the movie perspective, like, are you going to look also at the differences? Because I think that you're focusing on the similarities mainly now. Would it be also interesting to see how these teachers with different cultural backgrounds see the ideal image? And maybe also, if you add the student perspective, that could be another additional perspective. So what do you think? Would it be useful, or it's better to focus on the universals, so to say?
Actually, I'm not sure that we were trying to go for the universals. I think I said that this was only the sort of first stab at what, just for us to sort of look at, to see what kind of data we got. Something that we want to do is actually analyze the data by country and see whether there are any similarities between those, and then between countries, whether there are differences. That's one of the sort of avenues that we've already suggested. So that might bring out something. But I think the responses we got were pretty diverse, and people, of course, you haven't seen sort of each individual lot of responses by sort of an individual. We've just at this point gone across the whole piece and gone for themes. But as I say, that was only the initial stage. We are hoping to do more with the data.
Sounds really interesting, because there's so many ways to yes. even expand it even more, although it's already quite big. Yeah, and just a very brief second question is that I really like the idea that you involved the teachers in the data analysis. Mm-hmm. And do you think it actually is a good way forward in the future to have researchers practitioners? So how do you see this divide?
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't involve the teachers who responded to the survey in the analysis. Sorry if that came across.
And it was my sorry.
Yeah, no. But what we are trying to do through the sort of ILAR network is just to include a relatively broad range of people. Well, it will be researchers, because ILAR is a research association. So involve a relatively broad group of people in the kind of work that we are hoping to do. But I think involving teachers more would be a good idea, although I think there are probably quite a lot of practical challenges with teachers mm-hmm. not having the time, not getting paid for that kind of thing. So I think if you wanted, or if we as the network wanted to do something like that, it would probably have to be done quite locally. In a particular institution where, I don't know, where maybe you already work, and then there might be more buy-in, but I think otherwise it might be quite a tricky one.
I agree, it's still a problem, at least in the field, but
that's a good question.
Okay. But thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? I can't see any hands up. Do jump in.
I can ask an oh, okay, Lisa.
Okay, yes. Go ahead. somebody is talking but Lisa. Is muted.
Lisa, you're muted.
Okay, the problem was getting people to mute. Now it's getting unmuted.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm Lisa Lochtel and I'm with Movi as well. But oh, yes. I was just curious as to what were, did anybody talk about the differentiation between learner levels? So for example, if you're going to be starting off with a language versus if you're making assumptions that somebody already has a level of language and how that would influence technology, as well as how much is their teacher control versus independent learning influencing? So I guess I have those two questions.
No, we didn't take that into account. It was a more sort of a causal picture that we got. And I mean, we also relied on the REN members to send out the questionnaire. So we had no control over where things went. And I think if you wanted more that kind of information, I think it would be a more sort of a study that is much more steered in terms of participants. So we just wanted a more, as I say, a more general view from teachers across the world to see what their views were.
Yeah, because I think when you were talking about how teachers were saying that they have to also teach the technology as well. So sort of like, what is the differentiation between what teachers should be expected to teach and what learners can be expected to do? Mm-hmm. And also if the curriculum tends to be more set in a way, then teachers may feel more pressure.
Yeah.
That they sort of have to have this dual role of IT or technology expert.
Yes.
As well as curriculum expert, whereas if teachers feel that learners can take responsibility and can also make choices about their own learning environments, mm-hmm. I think that can then also reduce pressure in a way. So I was just wondering as to what is the approach maybe of the teacher in their own perceptions of how we do things. What's my role? What's the student's role?
And that's a good point. And I'm just thinking because we have started looking at the ideal teacher. And some of what you've just said would play into this, I would have thought. So what does an ideal teacher do? But then, again, there might be differences from country to country. What is mm-hmm. acceptable? What teachers, I don't know, are able to do or where they don't have to do something and the students would have to sort of jump in more. Then you've got, I don't know, sort of policies, local policies, mm-hmm. and all those kind of things to contend with as well. Yeah, that is an interesting one.
Thank you.
Anybody else? No? Or any?
That's okay. One more question. I know you mentioned that the participants mentioned pedagogy. I'm just curious, did they actually specify different types of learning theories, or did they just kind of put down like pedagogy?
It was relatively generic.
Okay.
And I mean, some people went a little bit more into detail, but quite a few of them didn't write or didn't give us a huge amount of information, but it was sort of like more, sort of sometimes a list of things they had in terms of the response. But no, we didn't really get that kind of detail. I think probably to get that kind of detail, you'd almost need to do interviews then and sort of follow up this kind of little study with, well, little in terms of breadth, with, as I say, interviews, which would be very interesting.
Yeah.
No? Any other?
I think it's Adrian.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask this in the previous round, but anyway, I just wanted to ask because you called the final taxonomy, the skills pyramid. And I was wondering, do you use this the term skills deliberately? So, because for me, it's kind of a narrower concept. For example, if you compare it with, I don't know, competencies, I know that it's widely used, for example, 21st century skill, although it's not necessarily only the skills in the narrow sense. Mm. What I'm thinking about is especially the dispositions. I'm a big fan of the term dispositions, especially in a pedagogical context. I think this is crucial.
Yeah.
So just a question, that is it a deliberate choice or?
Good question. And maybe it's got something to do with the time that the term that we started using the term. So that was the sort of very early 2000s, late 1990s, where at least in the UK, there was a lot about skills development. But I think you're right. I think since then, it tends to be competencies that people prefer to use. And that's not something that we then changed. I mean, we haven't really gone back to the skills pyramid, well, beyond sort of changing it in a relatively minor way, as I say, for quite a long time. But yeah, I think good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a label, what you call it. But I mean, it would express probably more, because when I looked at what they mentioned, that there are quite a lot of concepts related to dispositions.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, just something to think about. Yeah.
Good point. Although we're not, I mean, at the moment, we're not going back to the pyramid, although maybe at some point, especially after sort of having completed this project, it might be something worth looking at, and then maybe, yeah, talking more about competencies. I agree.
Thank you.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions, so we thank Regina. Regina.
Thank you very much. Oh, Regina. Very good.
Yeah. And like you already asked at the beginning, the slides will be distributed and we'll have the recording. There is there is a question. Maya, you're really challenging my eyesight. Oh God. That's Judith. Judith, you have a question and we're trying to read it. Sorry for interrupting.
No, she just...
Oh, okay. Judith, you want to... Hi.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Now I'm at home in my comfort zone, but I will never ever experiment with my phone. Lesson learned. Sorry, Regina.
No problem, Judith. It was just that I started thinking whether I've put in a setting for the Zoom session that everybody joining in will have their mic on, because I don't remember a session where so many people had their mics on, but it could be something that I did actually. But we'll make the recording available and then distribute the slides to, I think we'll just make a link and put them online somewhere and send it on our department mailing lists. Is that okay?
That sounds good. And if you can think of anything else that you want to ask, you can either send me an email or just grab me when I'm back in October.
Yeah, so this was just a kind of introduction to what Regina is doing and what kinds of activities and cooperation we can find. So remember that she'll be back. And then she's available via email in between the visits in Jyväskylä. Okay, thank you.
No, thanks very much for the invitation. And thanks for the questions. And I'll have a think about some of them and see what we can do in the future.
Right. Okay.
And I look forward to meeting more of you.
Yes.
At the end of October.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Ciao.
And then we stop the recording. How do we do that? Hey, Anne, hey, Doff. We will discuss this tomorrow. Yeah, Salma and Eleni. Yeah, but the recording. Yeah. You know what? Why it's tiny.
Ah. Mm. Okay. Stop.